Losing a child is a parent's absolute worst nightmare. But this mom is going to tell you how she got through it and what she's doing to keep the memory of her child alive. This is episode 99 of Shut Up and Grind with Robert B. Foster. Let's talk about this.
How we doing? This is Rob Foster with RBF Fitness and Nutrition.
Know the value that you bring to the marketplace. You know what your passion is. You know why you do what you do.
So racism, it's out there, but it doesn't have to stop you. Just because somebody might look at you a certain way, that doesn't have to stop your forward progress.
That's where you have to eliminate the excuses. You got to make that game plan say, for me to get to that point.
Happy hump day, everyone. So those of you who watch the show on the regular, sadly, this is not the first time we've had to discuss this topic. So I believe this is the fourth time now that I've had a parent on that had to deal with losing their child. And you all know I have five kids and I couldn't imagine going through that. But unfortunately, it happens every single day. But it's what we're going to get into today is what do you do after? You know, so if you guys were on and you saw the episode I did with my niece, it's like being at the funeral of a two-year-old and just seeing the way she read his eulogy and just seeing the way that she processed what happened was absolutely amazing. And I was able to get her on the show and she, you know, walked through her thought process, because it's very easy to see the devastation that will occur in that moment. But she just had a completely different mindset. And so that's why I love talking to people and, you know, meeting new people that go through experiences and just finding out how they picked up the pieces. And so I took the bio off the page. And so my guest today has unfortunately had to deal with this as well, but she's going to talk to us about how she got through it and how she pivoted to turn it into something positive. So joining me is mother and author April Foer. She is quite an incredible woman, and I'm actually not going to read this whole bio because I want her to tell you in her words what she went through. So welcome, April, to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My pleasure. So thank you for taking the time and sharing your story with us. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
My pleasure. So where are you joining us from?
I am joining you guys from Conway, South Carolina.
Okay, South Carolina, nice. Yeah, I'm up here in Rhode Island, New England.
Okay. Yeah,
so if I say some words without the R's, that's why. That's a New England thing, you know?
Okay, well, I don't even know what I might sound real country, so we'll see.
All right, so the one question I start off with all my guests is just give me a quick summary of just who is April.
Who is April? April is a 37-year-old single mom who lost a child and didn't want her legacy or didn't want the memory of her to go away. So I decided to turn that sadness into some books, into children's books. I have a 4-year-old who just turned 4 today. Today is my baby's birthday.
Nice.
Happy birthday to Leah.
Awesome. Happy birthday.
So I'm just out here trying to build a legacy and a life, you know, to leave for my daughter. I want her to see that, you know, you're going to come up against different things, you know, different adversities, but don't stop. Let that propel you to the next level. So
absolutely.
That is who I am. Yeah.
Like you already, we speak the same language.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Don't let it stop you. Let it be, you know, the things that you build your life on, your future on. Let it be your motivation.
Yes, absolutely. I teach people. Oh, speaking of my niece, she just joined on.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So like I said, she just went through this, and that's her message to you.
Thank you.
All right. So, one thing. You just said, you know, you don't want their memory to go away. Like, people ask me all the time, like, how I dealt with the passing of my father. And I was like, because he just passed in body. Mm-hmm. And like everything he taught me is still here. The memories are still here. He built things for my gym. He had a brand new pair of headphones that he left by. So I gave my daughter mine and I wear his headphones. Mm-hmm. He had a wallet with his initials are RBF also.
Okay.
He had a brand new wallet that he hadn't opened and he had RBF inscribed in it. So mm-hmm. I used that wallet. So I had pieces of his obituaries on the dashboard of my car. I'm constantly reminded of him. So I love that you said that. But before we dive into all of that, let's talk about you. Mm-hmm. Talk about you. So what was your big childhood dream growing up?
I wanted to be an actress.
Nice.
In kindergarten, I wanted to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And then as time went on, I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to be out there. I wanted to perform. I wanted to get on the stage. I wanted to be known. So that was my childhood dream.
That's awesome. Like what type of acting? Like TV, movies?
Yeah, TV.
Broadway?
I wanted to do it all. So I did, mm-hmm. when I was younger, I did plays for our local theater. And one of the biggest dreams was to, I love like skit shows, like Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. Like I would have loved to have been on Saturday Night Live. Now there's the Black Lady sketch show.
Okay.
Like I'm like, oh, sign me up. I want to, you know, but that type of thing. Like I love, you know, I'm a big movie buff. So any way I could have gotten out there, could have, you know, been on the scene, I would have loved that. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. So far our paths are very, very similar. At one point I wanted to be a lawyer. I still want to get on TV. I'm hoping that this is my gateway to eventually land on my own talk show.
Yeah.
I would love to do this in a studio with a live audience and just get to the heart of people's stories. So that's amazing. All right. So did you have any obstacles or any barriers growing up within your childhood?
No. Two parent home. My parents are still married to this day, 52 or 53 years, older brothers. I guess I was considered an oops. My brothers are 12 and 14 years older than I am. So, you know, oh, okay. Here you go, April. a regular childhood, very supportive family, very supportive, extended family. Like, you know, our village is strong. My daughter just we went to the zoo to celebrate her birthday and it was like a 2-hour drive from us. And we had about 30 people come with us. So
nice.
Very supportive family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge. It's like digging into people's backstories. I never know what's going to surface. You know, because sometimes some people had it rough dealing with abuse and dealing with drugs and or an absentee parent and mm-hmm. so many things. So it's very rare when people are just like, nope, everything was good. So
okay,
you know, yeah. I applaud you. I mean, again, same with me. So I was born in New York City, but then my parents moved us up here to Rhode Island, mm-hmm. completely different environment. I'm talking we lived in the projects in mm-hmm. in Far Rockaway mm-hmm. and in Brooklyn. And then I grew up in the woods. So
yeah.
It was like a completely, completely different environments.
Yeah, I'm from the country too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, my dad, he just got sick of the city life, you know,
mm-hmm.
wanted us in a better school system, safer environment. So we grew up in the woods.
Yeah.
All right. So how was your high school for you?
High school was fun. High school was... I had a lot of cousins, so it was a whole bunch of us. It was a gang of us, like, you know, close cousins, extended family, things like that. High school was very fun. I was in a lot of clubs, I was the Thespian Honor Society president, drama club president. I was homecoming queen.
Nice.
So, and I think my superlative was most prissy. So but high school, I had a great high school experience. It was great. You know, I didn't have to deal with the things that the, you know, kids are going through now. Like we didn't have social media. There wasn't, I mean, there was bullying and things like that, but I wasn't a part of that. I guess
We used to pass notes back then.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. Like passing notes and having like the notebook that you would get. Like, it's so funny. Like, I was doing that stuff at my mom's house and like, yes. You're seeing your old letters. Like, this is how we used to text.
Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. I love sharing those stories with my kids. You'd be in class, you know, the teacher turned their back and you pass it over. I'm like, awesome, what are you doing? Nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Very old school.
Yeah. All right. So as you're getting towards the end of high school, what did you see yourself doing career-wise?
I didn't know at that time. I didn't know what, when I was coming out of high school, I didn't know. I knew that I didn't want to live in South Carolina. So I knew that I wanted to get out. So I, after high school, I went to like our technical school. And I think I majored in education because I knew that I always wanted to work with kids. Like I love children. I love working with kids. And I was like the neighborhood, you know, babysitter and things like that. So I went that route to education. And then, I worked at the DMV.
Okay.
My mom worked there and I ended up working there. I worked there for a year and then I moved to Atlanta. But that was an experience.
I was going to say, hold on, because we're not glossing over that. So, let's go deeper into that experience. Because I don't meet the happiest people at the DMV.
No, and I tried to be. We start off happy. About 8:30, we start off happy. By 5, we are a totally different person. everyone comes in with like, you know, this preconceived notion of how we're going to be. Like, you know, you see your stereotypical, like, you know, grumpy person. But like, you know, we would try to be really happy. I would try to be happy. And then you tell somebody that they didn't have the right form or something like that. And they waited in line and they would get so upset and you just have to sit there and smile and say, okay, you know, I don't.
I'm not built for that life.
I only stayed there for a year. I was like, you know what? Mm-mm, no, my mom, she retired from there. And people, you know, everywhere we go in our town, everyone's like, oh yeah, Miss Betty, she worked at the DMV. So she is the DMV lady. And she was great at it. I was just like, you know, this is not the ministry I'm supposed to be in.
Exactly.
Not for me.
All right. So in your technical college, what did you major in?
Elementary education.
Elementary ed. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. All right. And then what did you do post school?
Oh, I moved to Atlanta and I started nannying there. And then I ended up having a nanny service. So I, turned that into just having my own service, my own nanny service, connecting families with nannies and running that. And until I came back to South Carolina. So I worked for a little bit. I worked in the school district with special needs children.
Okay.
And that was great. I tried to run away from that. Like I would see the different positions and it would say special needs. And I was like, I can't do it. I'm not, you know, I'm a softie. I'd want to take all the kids home with me. And I tried to stay away from that at all costs. And then there was a position, they worded it different. At that time, I didn't know that if it was like the 3-year-old program, that it was the special needs program. So I was like, okay. And I went and I fell in love with the school. And I met the children. And I was like, oh, okay. And I fell in love with them. And then that just started, like, my heart is now, you know, I work closely with a lot of children with autism and Down syndrome. And it was like where I was supposed to be. It's like how you know, you get into things that you don't, you know, you try to stay away from. And then it turns out being such a blessing to you and being what you were meant to be or meant, you know, to do at that moment. And that's what happened.
Yeah, see, and that's spot on because I dropped out of college, not once, not mm-hmm. twice, but mm-hmm. 3 times, right? 3 times. And it was mainly because the majors I picked went through psychology. Mm-hmm. And so I got turned off to psychology because when I was at the University of Rhode Island, the psych class was, there was like 660 kids in the class. The professor was like 80 years old and mm-hmm. just had no personality. And I was like, mm-hmm. I cannot sit through this stuff. I just can't do it. So everything I picked went through it. And now I get into people's minds. It's like it's just ironic how the universe works. You know,
it puts you where you need to be. It puts you where you need to be. Yeah.
Yep. I was trying to avoid it at all costs, and here I am. And now I'm a certified facilitator in True Colors, which is like another DISC assessment kind of thing.
Okay.
And so I work with people's minds all the time now. The one thing I was trying not to do.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So take me through how you met your child's father. Look, I get deep.
I see that. This is the first time I've ever been asked that. And I've been talking about the book for a while. We met on, it wasn't Tinder. It was Plenty of Fish.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So we met on Plenty of Fish. I mean, how else do you want to meet people these days? Well, it wasn't these days. It was, you know.
Yeah.
In 2014. But yes, we met on Plenty of Fish, I believe. I think that was it.
Yeah. Okay, so what caught you about him?
I thought he was cute. He was like, I have this type in my head and I never hardly ever, but he was the type that was in my head, like, you know, everyone, like my sister, she's like, oh, that's the April 4 original. Like, we always have that. She's like, oh, yeah, that's her type of guy. Yeah. And he was that guy, and he was very funny. Like, I love a humorous guy. Like, he was so funny, and he was really nice. And that's what attracted me to him.
Okay. Sorry, Chandra's commenting over here. Oh boy! All right, so you find out you're pregnant, and just walk me through that when you found out.
Okay, so I was celebrating my 30th birthday with my sisters and my parents. It was my parents. Gosh, at that time, maybe like 45th anniversary, something like that. I don't know. And so we went on a cruise. And before I left the cruise, my boyfriend at the time, he was like, do you think you're pregnant? And I was like, no. And I was like, I'm going on this cruise. Have a great day. I'll see you when I get back. And I mean, I was having fun. And when I got back, I was like, okay. We'll see. Something should happen. And nothing ever happened. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go take a test. And so I went to the Dollar Tree because I was like, I'm not wasting money just, you know, to throw it away because I'm not going to be pregnant. Dollar Tree tests are very, very true. They're very accurate. And so found out that I was pregnant. I was like, okay, but I was 30, so it was fine. I was like, okay, I'm 30 years old. That's great. I told my parents, they were over the moon. They were so excited. Emma Grace's father was excited. Everyone was excited. I told my sister, we're FaceTime, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And she's like, well, go get another test. So then I went and got the more expensive test, and it came back. I was like, pregnant. And I was like, right. And so I was super excited. And he was excited. Everyone was excited. I was in shock, but it wasn't the end of the world. Like, I was 30. Yeah. I was, you know, in my career, I was happy. So I was like, all right, we'll do this.
Nice. How was the pregnancy for you?
So I lost my daughter during pregnancy. Like, I was
pregnant. Oh, that's right. That's right.
16
that's right.
Weeks. Sorry. So yeah. We can get into that. So, it was just at the routine check, it was I think 9 or 10 weeks we went in, and that's when they do all the screenings.
Yeah.
And so my sister came from South Carolina. One of my good girlfriends came. And then, you know, Emma Grace's father's there. So we were all there. It was the first time that we were going to see see her. It was like that ultrasound. So we were all excited. Just the week, you know, like that weekend, we went and I did all my registry stuff. So I'm in, you know, Toys R Us or Babies R Us with the little gun, you know, clicking everything that I wanted and everything. So it was just a great time. I was so excited. And then we went to the appointment, and everyone was in the room. They did the ultrasound, and, you know, I could see her, and I was so excited, heard the heartbeat and everything like that. And then they gave us the printout of the pictures. So we were looking at the pictures, and we noticed that there was, like, you know, like a little lump on her neck. And we were joking about it because I have like a little roly poly neck or whatever. So I was like, well, I guess she got my neck. I don't know. And then so, but my Emma Grace's father had a daughter from a previous relationship. So he knew, he was like, and he told me, you know, later, he was like, I knew something was wrong. He said, because that wasn't normal to see that, but I didn't know, you know, so we were waiting, because after you get the screening, then you talk with the doctor, things like that. So I sent my sister home. I was like, well, you have, you know, a long drive, go home. I'll let you know. I sent my girlfriend. I was like, thank y'all for coming. You know, I'll let you know the results, because I'm not thinking anything of it. Like, I'm like, she's going to be fine and we're going to move on. And so the doctor, he came in, we were sitting in the room and he came in, his face was just blank, no expressions. And he was like, well, your child, there was some abnormalities. And I was like, well, okay. And he was like, very, very matter of fact, like the worst bedside manner at all. Like, it just, it always bothers me, because it's like, you're delivering life devastating news and you need to have some softness about you, even though this might've been the 50th time that you said it, but this is the first time that I'm hearing it. Yeah. So it was, you know, it wasn't, he was like, you know, I remember he said, well, you know, if at the time we didn't know if it was a girl or boy. And he said, well, if the child has, if it comes back and if it's a girl, then it has Turner syndrome, and then she'll have a 1% chance of making it. It could be Down syndrome or it could be something else. I can't remember the other. And my ears just went blank. Like, I just, it was like complete, like deafening silence. And I just know that I remember just crying and wailing. And I was like, what, you know, what could I have done? What, you know? And he was like, and then he told like a crutch, like a joke. And he was like, well, did he massage your feet? And I said, no. And he was like, see, nothing would have helped. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Wow. Like, who does this? Who says this? Like, wow. You just told me that if I have a girl, there's a 1% chance of her making it. And then you just told me that she could have, you know, the child could have Down syndrome. Like, who does this? This is, it was every emotion. Wow. So I had to take a test called a karyotype test, where they, I didn't want the amniocentesis. I didn't want that, because that's when they, you know, go through your stomach, through the baby.
Yeah.
The sac and things. I didn't want that. So they did the cryotype test, where they take the mother's blood and they're able to tell the sex of the child that way. Cause it was very early to tell. Mm. So I had to wait. My baby's in here now. Oh, yes. Yes, sweetie. Let me finish doing the show. Okay. Okay. I promise. Mm-hmm. Give me 2 seconds. Okay. Come and say, hey, let's say everyone. This is Talia. Today is her birthday. Say hi.
Happy birthday, Talia.
What do you say?
Okay. I like your hair.
What do you say? Say thank you. Okay, can you take my phone? Okay, well then exit the room and then here, take my phone. Go play the phone. Mommy, be right out. Okay? Close the door. Let me hold it so I can put the code in. Sorry.
No, it's okay. This is actually why I like live recordings, because this is real life. You know what I mean? It's like, this is real life.
All right, go. Close the door. Thank you.
But I want a new guinea pig
shorts. Okay, I'll get you some shorts. Okay. And where was I? I had to wait.
Yeah.
So I took the test, and I had to wait 14 days to get the results back. And they called Emma Grace's father, and we were going to the movies that day. And because I was trying to, like, that whole week, the 2 weeks, I mean, I was reading everything, which you're not supposed, you know, you shouldn't do that. You look on everything on the internet, mm-hmm. and you're reading everything, you're scaring yourself, and then you're trying. So it was like every emotion. 1 minute, I'm like trying to hype myself up. And then I work with special needs kids. So it's like, this is my child. She has special needs. We'll make it work. You know, let's go. And so it was just like up and down. My parents, my mom came and stayed with me. And then, so he came in, we were going to the movies that day. I was trying to keep my mind off of everything. And he was just, I could just tell in his face that she had Turner's. And I didn't know anything at the time about Turner's, but I ended up learning. So she had a 1% chance of making it. And I was like, well, let's see if she's going to be that 1%. And so what she had on her neck was a cystic hygroma. And that was an indicator that she had abnormalities, and it's where the lymph nodes, they don't drain, so they collect fluid. And so 15% of miscarriages are of girls that have Turner syndrome. And so I waited as long as I could to see if she was going to, because I kept praying that it was going to reverse itself. She was going to be fine and we were going to move on. We were going to live happily ever after. and she didn't. She continued to, you know, progress another way. And her body was filling up with fluid because, you know, at a certain time in the pregnancy, she was supposed to be this amount of weight, but she was more than that because she was filling up with fluid and things like that. So she, I just decided, I prayed over it. I talked to God and I asked him what, you know, what was the best, what I needed to do. And so I just decided to terminate and I prayed over it because that I've never been, you know, I was like, this is my child, but I didn't know if she was in pain. I didn't know her quality of life, if she was going to be here. I didn't know if she was even going to make it, you know. It was going towards that I was going to end up having a miscarriage, but I also had to think about my mental. And I don't think that if I would have went through the miscarriage that I would be able to handle that myself, like mentally. So that is why I decided to terminate and make that hard decision of not having her. And that was very hard. And I had to pray over that. And I still have that guilt to this day, even though I've prayed over it and things like that. But it's still with me because I'm like, you know, yeah. You know, but yeah.
What was the father's feelings?
At that time, he from the beginning, he was like, well, you know, I think we should just go ahead and terminate. And I was just like, mm-mm. So that definitely kind of at that point, I was like, well, okay, well, you know, I don't want to continue on with you because, you know, you don't want to continue on with her. You don't want to fight and things like that. But So we ended up stopped talking and yeah. That was that. And we've talked, you know, years after that. And he was like, I was just scared. But at that time, I couldn't. I was just like, dude, like, you just gave up. You know, I was very upset. I was upset because I'm like, you know, I had to do this alone. And you were just so easy to just say, well, you know, because I'm thinking like, this is my baby. Like, so what? Like, let's keep fighting. Let's keep going. So, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
So I have a question that I want to ask you, but I want to preface it before I ask you.
Okay.
So not talking about the pros and the cons of it, but do you have an opinion when you hear pro-abortion people refer to the fetus as a cluster of cells?
I think that, I didn't look at it like that. I can just speak for my own. I just looked at it like that. But I do understand why abortion is important. And why, just because that was never the route that I wanted to take. That is, I don't want to take anyone's, you know, that's your body. I don't want to take that away from anyone else.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I just want your thoughts.
Yeah, I didn't look at her as a cluster of cells. Like, that was my child. She had a name for me. But like, okay, so when I went to the clinic, it wasn't like I went to a special place. Like, I went to a clinic where there were girls that were just having abortions. And I was in there because I had to, excuse me. But there were girls in there that wanted to eat fried chicken. They wanted to eat hot wings. So I was like, we are in different places. Like, I was crying. And then one girl, she was like, oh, you'll be fine. They'll give you the medicine. You'll be fine. I was like, okay. Like she was a frequent flyer there, I guess. And I was just like, okay, this. And I told the, you know, I said, y'all need to have the mothers that really don't want to go through in a separate place. Cause it makes you feel differently. I didn't ever refer to my child as a cluster of cells. She wasn't a cluster of cells. That was never my go-to. That was never my, you know, initial reaction was like, oh, well, she, you know, but when they do, that's on them. If that's how they look at it, you know, to some people, it might, you know, it didn't develop into a person yet.
Yeah.
To them. Yeah. To me, from the beginning, she was, you know, she was my baby.
Yeah. Because with that stuff, I mean, I know like circumstances matter and all that. And I have another show that where I talk about the pros and the cons. So I just wanted to know for you having to go through it, just what your opinion was on it. Because obviously you had an attachment.
Yeah.
You know, so people that don't have an attachment are the ones that are saying, oh, just, you know, you'll be fine. They can get medicine. Like, no, but they didn't have that attachment.
Yeah. And that's, and everyone, you know, everyone is different in that. I, from day one, when I found out, like, she, if before I even, you know, before she had a heartbeat, like, she was mine, you know, and some people, they don't have that attachment. So then, you know, that's on them. But to me, the first day, as soon as I found out, I was, she was mine.
Yeah. So the procedure is finished now. Where is your mindset?
I was all over the place. I was kind of numb, you know, like I came. So everything happened fast. So when I found out she had Turner's, I immediately moved back to South Carolina to be with my parents. Then I had to come back to Atlanta probably like a week or 2 weeks after to have the procedure done. And I was just kind of numb. I was just, you know, I was here. I was with my family and it was what I needed to do. But it was just like, it was just an emptiness. Because when you go in, you're going in and they asked me if I wanted to hear her heartbeat. And I said no, because they have to make sure that the baby is alive, you know. And I said I didn't. I just didn't want to do that. Like, I've already, you know, I've talked to her and I prayed to her and I asked her for forgiveness and everything like that. And so when, you know, after it happens and you wake up and, you know, it's just like, it was an emptiness because she was, you know, she wasn't there anymore. And that just broke my heart. Like, I think I probably, when I woke up, I was crying. And if, you know, because we drove, so it was a 5-hour drive. And so, you know, you wake up because you're, you know, you're still under sedation and things. You wake up. And then when you wake up, you know, you're reminded like, my stuff, you know, my belly is empty. She's not there anymore. And you cry and then you go back to sleep and things like that. I think I slept for a long time. And it was just numb. My family was there. My mom was very protective of me. She wouldn't let me do pretty much anything. But then, you know, I just, after that, I enrolled, I finished because I stopped school too. I stopped school many times too. And then, but I made like a promise to her. I was like, I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to be a mom that you deserve to have. And so I went back to school. And finished, and with school, that's how I started writing the book. It was a project that we had to do to write a children's book. So I started it in 2015, just as like the project. And I was like, okay, this is something that I want to do. And then 2019, that's when I complete the first book. But I finished school, and that year, because it was May 23rd, 2014. And May and November, which would have been her birthday, it would have been her birth month. November 8th, we had a fundraiser walk for Turner syndrome. So it was like, I was like, I'm doing this. Like, this is what happened, but I don't want to stop. People are going to know about Turner syndrome, and I'm going to continue to talk about it. And maybe this is why this happened to me. Maybe this is why this is part of my story, because I'm supposed to get, you know, her story out there and the stories of the other butterflies. Girls with Turner syndrome are called butterflies. So I was like, hey, maybe I'm supposed to do this. Cause I just felt like he would not have someone who loves children. Cause I was mad. Like, I was upset. Like, I was like, Jesus, are you serious right now? Like, I was upset with him because it was like, my life, I took care of children. And now I get to have one that looks like me, and then it was taken away, you know? So it's like, this is not right. But after I got over that, because you can't be mad with God, but after I got over that, then I was like, okay, there is a reason to this. There is a reason, a purpose for the pain.
Yeah, my niece said something similar, that like she always wanted to get into speaking and empowering others. And she's like, now she's doing it. She's like, so like, maybe this is why Noah got called home. Mm-hmm. And now I'm able to pursue this and help other people. So it's great that you found the power through the pain. Mm-hmm. Like it says above us, your true power lies in your story.
Yeah.
And so I tell people that, like, I help people craft their core stories.
And so I take whatever mess they went through and help them find the power in it. Then you can move forward. Like if racism was really rampant in the area where you grew up, okay, let's take those experiences and inspire other people. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were in an abusive relationship, all right, let's take those experiences and empower other women who are currently in abusive relationships, you know? So like you can find power in absolutely anything.
Yeah.
You know, so hats off to you for stepping, well, recognizing that there is a power and then stepping into it. Mm-hmm. So what were your next steps from there?
We did the fundraiser. I did the program, still trying to, you know, get her story out there. So in 2019, I was like, you know what, let's just write the book. Let's see what happens. Let's just do it. So I was talking to a coworker of mine and we were just talking about children's books and things like that. Cause you know, when you work at, you know, you're working in a daycare and things like that and teaching and you're looking at these books and you're like, I really could do this. Like, cause there's three words right here and the kids love it. And I was like, I always thought about, Pete the Cat. Those are like the most simple books, but people love them. And he is, you know, and I was like, let's just do it. And, but I also wanted to, because when I was looking for things on Girls with Turners, there wasn't anything out there. And so I'm like, if you don't see it, create it. And that was the thing. So I wanted a book and I wanted her, I wanted to keep getting her out there. I wanted to I always have her with me because this is a little urn, so she's in here. My mother has one too, and when my daughter gets older, she'll have one. So she's always with me, but I wanted to share her story. I wanted to get her out there. So I wrote the book, I think in like 2 days, I believe.
Wow.
The first book, I always start off with the titles. So I have like the 5 titles so far that we're gonna do. We're on book 2. And so I just started writing them and then I knew what I wanted her to look like in my head. So I gave them a picture of my daughter, Talia. And then I just knew that I wanted what I wanted her. And she looks like what I think she would look like, you know? I wanted, cause writing the book, I wanted to give her experiences that I think she would, you know, she would go through or that she would, you know, see or she would do. So it makes me feel a little close to her when I write the stories and things like that. I feel like, okay, I think, you know, this is our time together. I think Emma Grace would like that. Her name is Emma Grace and we call her Egg because I wanted to give her a last name. She doesn't have our last name in the book, but I wanted to give her to God, like, you know, God always wins. So her last name is God Wins. So I wanted to Emma Grace Godwins because he pulled me out. Like if it wasn't for him and if it wasn't the peace that he gave me, I wouldn't be here. And so he gave me the peace and he never left my side. So I knew that, you know, he would carry me on. And then I wanted to have little books out there with little girls that look like my girls or my, you know, my daughter and things or her little Afro puffs. And so she does. She looks like my daughter. She has her Afro puffs. And Talia, we talk about Egg frequently. And she's like my big sister. And when we did the book release in February, she wanted to wear her hair like her big sister. And I love that. Like, even though she doesn't have that big sister, but here with her, she still gets to do those things. Like you want to emulate your big sisters and things like that. So she likes to wear her hair in her puffs and things like that. So she still gets to experience that on some level.
That's amazing. I love that concept.
Thank you.
All right. So how did you go about getting it published?
I didn't know what I was doing. So I was like, okay, what do you do? So I went to the Google and and then I looked on Amazon and you can publish your book on Amazon for free. They'll put, you know, so you can be a self-published author. And I went to the way I got the illustrator, I went on Fiverr and I went through a couple of illustrators. I sent them pictures. They would send me pictures back and I decided on one and he was great. And I really liked the story as well. And so just went from there and I'm very picky when it comes, you know, I was like, And I'm so thankful because he was not like, oh, girl. Like, he was very patient with me because I'm like, this is my baby. You know, this is my baby, and I want this to look a certain way. He was very patient and going through that process. And then we got the book out there. I uploaded it on Amazon, and then, you know, send that link out. And here we are. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. All my graphics, all my stuff, I do it on Fiverr. It's a great resource.
Yes. Yes. Love Fiverr.
Yeah. I'm actually redoing the intro video that I played earlier. Because mm-hmm. since that video, I've done 75 episodes, I want to say. So yeah. I had it made pretty early in the process. I was like, there's so much more content out there now. So let's do a remix.
Yeah.
Let's see how it goes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I love it. So to recap, you know, like everything that you've gone through and just watching your delivery, mm-hmm. you know, just it speaks to your character. Because when we first started, I was like, I can tell she has a big heart. You know, just from the way you were just telling your story and just watching how everything unfolds, which is why I like the organic approach. Because I know I've asked you a couple things that you weren't ready for, but
yeah.
but just getting your genuine answer. But that's why I like doing it this way. You know, yeah. so the audience gets to connect with the real you.
Yeah.
You know, and just see your real feelings about things. But you know. So you're a single mom. You have a 4-year-old. Her birthday's today. You know, we got mm-hmm. to see her early. If you're tuning in late, you know, you can go back and see her. If you're listening to the audio only on the podcast site, then sorry, you're not going to get to see her. But, you know, but celebrating her birthday. So you got book number one down. Do you have all 5 of them done?
No. So book 1 and 2, they're down. They are, you know, got to show the books. So book 1, so the first book is like the intro. It's you're learning about immigrants. You're learning a lot about Turner syndrome. So it's very informative. Yeah. In the first book, she gets a new friend. so you learn about her. You learn about her character and things like that. In the second book, she gets hearing aids because a lot of girls that have Turner syndromes, they have hearing loss problems.
Okay.
And so throughout the journey of immigrants, you're going to learn about Turners. You're going to learn about the things that they go through. The third book. So I'm in the book. I'm pregnant in the book with Talia. So in the third book, she's going to get a promotion. She's going to become a big sister. So that's what, you know, you're going to learn about, you know, that you're going to meet a lot of the other family. Because I love putting my family in the book. Like, my parents are in here. I have my brothers, they're in here, my aunties, good friends. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be running out of books if I got to put everybody. So in the third book, we're going to have a family reunion and everybody's going. You know, but yes, I have the titles for the 5 books so far. And I will release a book every February because February is Turner Syndrome Awareness Month. So I want to release, I will be releasing a book every February until, so for the 5 books. I don't know if we're going to have a 6th one. I would love to, just where God leads me. That's what we're going to do. But so far there's 5 books that will be, you know, under the series so far.
All right. So Turner Syndrome Awareness Month. Now I'm going to be 47 in August.
Okay.
I've never heard of it. I realize February is also Black History Month, so mm-hmm. it might be getting shadowed by that. But mm-hmm. how can we work on getting more people to know about it?
Well, with my books, we learn about it. And I also have the links, you know, to the Turner Syndrome Society. Yes, Talia. Okay, give me a second, and I'll help you. Okay. She wants to get her birthday dress on. But so you can go to Turner Syndrome Society, and that's where you can learn a lot about. Hold on, baby. Wait. Can you give me a second? Let me finish and I'll put it on. Okay? I promise. But like a lot of people don't know about it. So it's just, you know, on our website, on our page, we share a lot of facts about Turner syndrome. And I always direct people to just Googling it, because there's usually a chapter. They have a lot of chapters in different areas, but you don't know about it until you hear someone, or you watch shows like yours where people are talking about it and having me on as a guest and things like that, and you learn about it. But yeah, Turner Syndrome Society, the Turner Syndrome Foundation, because I didn't know anything about it. And I worked with special needs kids. You know, I did that for like 5 years, and I never learned anything about it until it happened to me personally. You know, it's so many people that I run across, and I tell them like, oh, you know what? I do have a friend that I knew. Talia, give me a second, baby. And, but yeah, so that's how they can find out about it.
Okay. Are there any causes for it?
No, it just happens. It's not genetics. Cause I did it. We did like a gene test, a genetic test. It's not, you know, you can't blame it on this person. You know, you can't, it just happens. Every 2,500 to 4,000 girls are, you know, diagnosed with Turner syndrome. And a lot of times, I was very lucky when I found out so early on. There's ladies that I've spoken with that didn't find out till they were 18.
Oh, geez.
So they're like, they're short in stature. If they don't take hormone growth injections, then they usually average about 4'8", between 4'6", 4'8". They're short in stature. They may have like a web neck, because the web neck comes from the cystic hygroma that my daughter had. Like, yes. Once the fluid leaves, then they're left with like a web neck. There's, you know, different characteristics. They might have a lot of moles on their face. They might have low setting ears, and things like that. So you know, it's things that you don't know what to look for. Sorry, I'm momming over here. Wait.
Put it there. All right, momming comes first.
Yeah, all right. So we went shopping yesterday, and we got some birthday dresses, and she wants to put on her birthday dress. Now, can mommy finish the show? Can I? Thank you. Let me finish. I'm almost done, okay? And then we'll make funnel cakes.
See, my kids are older, so now I can just say, don't bother me till I come back upstairs. And they don't.
Oh, baby, let me finish. Yes, we'll do them today. I promise.
I'm breaking these out.
Okay, close the door. Thank you.
Yeah, my youngest, I have twin boys who are 12.
Oh, wow. Yeah, she's 4 and every bit of it. And I don't know. They grow up so fast.
Yeah, for real. My oldest is 22.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's not one to do.
Yeah, my second oldest, she'll be 19 in July, and then my middle child, she's 14.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of fun, but, you know, we'll go back 10 years ago, atmosphere was a little different.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a little, like, that's why I completely understand that. So it's like, you know, like, that's real life. So any mom watching this, they're going to be like, yeah, that's how it would go if mine was on.
They don't want anything until you start doing something. Yep. And then she's like, now can you help me with my taxes? I'm like, girl, you know, they just need the most random things. But yeah,
I probably had about a solid decade where I could not go to the bathroom without somebody knocking on the door.
Oh yeah. Like
10 solid years.
Between Talia, we have a cat, between Talia and Shady, I'd never have any alone time. That's the stuff that they don't tell you, like, when you're leaving the hospital, like, you know, you're never going to go to the restroom by yourself ever again. There's always going to be someone that comes in, and you have no problem, you know, like, it's funny. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I'd be like, I was just on the couch for 45 minutes. 45 minutes.
Exactly.
I was accessible. I'm in the bathroom for half a second.
Hey, I need this. I need something off the top shelf.
For real. Oh my Lord. So what would you say to, I don't even know how to word this. So like how can we better inform people? So we have your books.
Mm-hmm.
So like have you linked up with doctors?
No, at this moment, I haven't. I have reached out and partnered or, you know, worked with the Turner Syndrome Society. Mm-hmm. And because like I was doing the fundraiser walks and things like that. So I've spoken with a few parents, like they've given my numbers to a few parents that want to start walks and things. And that's just it, keeping the walks going. And I think we might plan for a walk this year or early next year, like in that February time, but keeping the walks going and just trying to, because there's no one, you're not going to find out about it until it hits you. It's such a rare disease. Like it's not breast cancer. Yeah. It's not affecting a lot of people. It, you know, that it gets that national attention. You know, it's not that well known. So you're not going to get it until people start, until it happens to you. And then, you know, so it's just trying to keep. Yes, Talia. Okay, just mash the circle. Give me 5 more minutes, okay? Okay, give me 5 minutes and I'll be in there. But yeah, like you won't know about it, but it's like if you know someone, like it's just like you're trying to keep it low, like you want to make sure that people in your city learn about it, and then that starts the ripple effect. So it's so hard to bring the notoriety to it because it's not like Downs. It's not affecting a lot of children. It only affects girls, but the number isn't high that it brings that national, that people do know that February is the national, you know, Turner Syndrome Awareness Month. People don't know that, you know?
Didn't you say 1 in 4,000 girls? Mm-hmm.
So it's like between that 2,500 to 4,000, one will have it, you know, and then, you know, they'll have, and so that's the thing, like it's such a rare disease, and then they have a 1% chance of making it, you know, so when they do get here, they are truly blessings.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, like my sister had a brain aneurysm burst, and, you know, the doctors were like, people rarely survive this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we're going on 5 years later, and she's still kicking.
Yeah.
You know, she's still kicking. So, you know, I don't know. I just feel like 1 in 4,000, like there's a lot of girls, you know, like,
yeah. 4,000. Like, yeah.
I think that number would still be significant enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah. Cause there are other things out there that happen to a lot less people that make the mainstream stream news.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Yeah. Oh, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, so to just be trying to sweep things under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my longtime friends. see, parents get it, right? Other parents get it.
I promise.
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah. God. Like I said, I remember there were so many times, and with twins, you know, when they're little, like you're talking two of them.
Yeah.
Two of them. So one comes in, leaves, then the other one comes in. I'm like, guys.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No. Then I'll be yelling for the older kids, hold the twin. Just hold them.
Oh, but do believe, before I started, I had her set up. I had her favorite show on. I had her snacks out. I have her drink out. Like, I was like, give me this time. Mm-hmm. I will be right. She's like, yeah, I'm just going to watch TV. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but they still want you.
Yes.
That's what it is. They still want you.
Yes.
Oh, man. All right, so give us some final words.
I will leave you with, if you don't see it, create it. If there's something that is in you that you want to do, go out and do it and put your whole heart into it. And just don't stop. Like when the bad things happen, you know, don't lose your faith. You know, look at that as just knowing that it's going to get better. Just knowing, because that's where I got the peace from, because I was like, this is really rough right now. This really hurts. This is really painful. This is not what I wanted for life or what I thought was going to happen. But then it was like I got a peace because I knew that he would not just leave me there. I knew that this wasn't going to be the end of it. So I found peace knowing that, okay, it really sucks right now. It really does. but it's going to get better, and it's going to be so much better than what I could have imagined. Because losing Emma Grace, it's made me, I feel like, a better mom to Talia, because, you know, like, I'm so thankful and grateful that I have her. So it's just, now I probably have spoiled her beyond what I should have. She is, you know, she's my only one, but just, you know, don't lose that faith. It is going to, it might look really dark right now, and it might be very painful, but it is going to get better.
I know I said final word, but I lied. So how much was that in your mind when you were pregnant with Talia?
What, Emma Grace and losing her?
Yeah.
Oh, it was there all the time. Because then when I found out that it was a girl, I was like, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Like, because I had to do the same screening. Because then at that time I was 33. And so, oh, it was, I never felt that peace when I was pregnant with her. Like, I was just like, I want to hurry up and get her out. Because I just felt like my body had turned on me the first time, which it wasn't. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't anyone's fault. But it was, I enjoyed being pregnant, but there was always like a hesitation to get too excited, to do too much, because you were just like, you know, oh, what's going to happen? And I remember my mom felt the same way. You know, we were excited, but it was just like, I don't know. You were just waiting for the shoe to drop, because you had already went through something so painful. So I feel like in a sense, I was definitely robbed of having like, whew, I can breathe. You know, I was holding my breath like the whole time, like, oh God, I hope, you know, every doctor's appointment, it was like, is she okay? You know? Yeah. So, but yeah, that it played a major role into it was very stressful, because I just didn't know. And even when we, you know, did all the screenings and she was fine, it was still like, I just want her to get here so I can, you know, make sure she's okay, and I can have her and I can touch her and I can, you know, so yeah.
Yeah. Like one of my clients, she actually had three miscarriages before finally having her daughter. And so how, like, becoming a new parent is amazing as it is, you know, even more so for the mothers, because you guys go through the process, you know, so you're attached before the baby's even here.
Yeah.
What was it like holding Talia that first time?
It was amazing. So I had to end up having a emergency C-section. And I remember I couldn't see her, you know, you can't see anything. So my mom was there with me and she could see everything. And I remember my first question was, well, I could hear her. So I want everybody to know I could hear her first. I knew she was alive and she was breathing. My friend was like, is she cute? And my mom was like, she's so beautiful. And then the doctor, when he presented her to me or brought her over, he was like, whoop, there it is. So now that song is back out there, like, that's her jam. She loves that. But when I finally did get to hold her, it was amazing. Like, I was just like, I can't believe she's here. And you're just like looking and you know, you examine everything. You're like, you look at your feet and your hands and your belly and your legs. And it was just the best feeling ever. I'm like, she's here. Like, she's finally here. She's mine. And now she's like, I'm still here, girl. I'm still here. I'm here. If you want to do something, I'm here. But, but yeah, it was just an amazing feeling.
That's great. Yeah, I wanted to ask you that earlier, but, you know, got sidetracked. So, right, we'll get it in there in the end there, and just end with that nice heartfelt moment. So that's amazing. Yeah. So thank you very much for joining. You know,
thank
sharing
you so
your
much,
story.
Mom. Thank you. Thank
taking
you.
Time out of your day. I learned a lot, because, like I said, I'd never heard of Turner syndrome. So learned a lot. So keep doing what you're doing. Get those books out there. Don't sign out when that.
Okay.
When I say goodbye, don't sign all the way out.
Okay.
Like I said, just keep doing what you're doing. It's amazing. And, you know, I'll do what I can to help you out. I wrote down a few names of people I'm going to connect you with.
Okay.
And then, you know, and that's the power of doing this, because you never know. Like, I met you because I had a pretty tense debate with your publicist. on somebody else's
I can
show.
Just imagine.
Right? It was it was a talk about, you know, sharing your story. And, you know, it's like we were kind of on opposite sides of the debate. So our relationship started out rocky. Mm-hmm. But then we were on a different show. Yeah. And then we both got to see a different side of each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, oh, okay. It's like I told her, there was nothing against you. I said, we were talking about a topic that we were on opposite sides of.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I have no problems with you, but mm-hmm. just that show, it was just more heartfelt. I think I spoke more deeply about the passing of my father. So like she got to see the emotional side of me and all that. And so it was good. And then through us connecting that way, mm-hmm. you know, she's going to be on my show. I think it's next Friday.
Okay.
So I met you. I have Folasade. Sorry if I didn't pronounce her name right, but she's joining me on Friday. But it's like, you just never know how an interaction is going to turn out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we started out at each other's necks. Mm-hmm. And then now we're connecting to each other. Because I have other people that I'm going to send her way as well. So, mm-hmm. so it's awesome. Yep.
Yeah, she's amazing. Hey, Chan. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have a great day.
Thank you. All
right. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So that wraps up episode number 99. Make sure you go back, listen. You know, we get deep into this conversation because you guys know that's how I do. You know, we don't stay up here at the surface, baby. We get down where the sharks are. Because that's the heart of the story. And that's the stuff that makes people lean into the story. Like I said, it's almost like you watch a movie, then once you get to the climax of the movie, you're like, you're on the edge of your seat. See, and that's how we want this show to flow. Like, we want you to actually get into the soul of the people and feel what they feel when they were going through their experiences. So that's what we do. We're coming back on Friday with another amazing story. So I'll see you guys then, Friday at 11 o'clock. Have a great day. And this is probably going to be the last time I'm going to play this outro because I've changed stuff. So be on the lookout for that.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com/speaks on Instagram at robert_B_Foster. On Twitter at RBF_fitness and on Facebook at Robert B. Foster. Till next time, shut up and grind.